Weetamoo, Heart of the Pocosets, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, 1653. Foreword. Weetamoo is a unique subject in the Royal Diaries series. Unlike other young women of the series, Weetamoo did not read or write, and would not have kept a diary in the traditional sense of written accounts of her daily life. Weetamoo's Wampanoag people had many other ways of recording things that were important to them. They etched pictures on rocks, drew on birch bark, and wove coded messages into the intricate patterns of wampum belts made of white and purple clamshell beads. Above all, they were an oral culture. The Wampanoag's ability to listen carefully and remember well was prodigious. By word of mouth, they passed down stories and histories, genealogies, prayers, recipes, ceremonies, ways of healing, and all that told them who they were and how to survive. As this book suggests, Native Americans of the 17th century in Massachusetts understood the potential power and usefulness of English writing. But the only, Roman numeral 4, Indians admitted to English schools were those who were willing to accept Christianity and English ways of life. Weetamoo was not one of those. And so, to present, the story of this brilliant Native American woman leader in her girlhood, we have imagined here what her thoughts and experiences might have been, and how she might have kept track of them. We hope some sense of the wisdom of her people is conveyed in this fictional account of the real Weetamoo. Massachusetts, Rhode Island, 1653. Page 3. Nipuna Keswoosh, Moonwen, Corn is Ripe, Late August, 1653, Mattapoisett. I am Weetamoo, daughter of Corbitant, sachem over the Pocosset band of our Wampanoag Nation. It is about to be my 14th winter, and I am sitting here on a hollow log atop this hill. As father and mother have bidden me, I am thinking and praying to Squant, the being who wishes over us girls and who watches over us girls and women. To tell the truth, I would rather be clamming. Never mind, though, here is my prayer. Please, Squant, grant me patience. But I was tempted to ask father if when he and mother were young, or even all the way back when the world was new, whether children weren't sometimes as restless as I. Wouldn't they rather have been laughing with their friends and digging their toes into the wet muck on the tide flats, pulling up fat, juicy quahogs for supper, instead of sitting still and hoping for someone to help them become patient? Page 4. But the elders say Squant lingers near us still, out on the sand dunes, and among the rocky places that line the bay. I wonder if she can hear me. This is what happened yesterday. Father told me to come walking with him on this same rise that overlooks our seaside village of Mattapoisett. Down below on the sandy shore, I spied the other girls drying fish on the wooden racks set over banked fires, and I was glad to be spared that smoky chore for the moment. I love to hunt for food, and I love to eat it, but I do not much love to prepare it. I could see clear over the choppy blue waters of the bay, all the way to Montaup, where Osamequin, Yellow Feather, he whom the English coatmen call Massasoit, often makes his own summer home. He is a great sachem among all the bands of our Wampanoag Nation. He and my father, Corbitant, have often disagreed in the past about Massasoit's willingness to help those English who call themselves saints and pilgrims, these Wataconoag, pink-faced coatmen from across the sea, whom my father despises. Massasoit says cautiously, there may be room for all, page 5, and thinks it best that we try to get along, but father distrusts them deeply. Everyone remembers how when the strangers first came here, they avowed themselves our devoted friends. My father met one coatman named Winslow, who said to him, where true love is, there is no fear. But then my father asked him why, when we visit their coatman village, their firearms are always at the ready, and why do they always shoot them into the air as though to impress us with their might? Winslow said this was a salute, and it was meant to honor us as guests. But my father said, I like not such salutations. My father loves to laugh and joke, but he is always the most serious person I know. He and Massasoit get on well enough now, but I think they will always disagree about the coatmen. I was pointing out to Father how a few trees might be just beginning to turn yellow over there to the west, on Massasoit's peninsula of Montaupe. He nodded, but I could see he did not wish to discuss Massasoit, or the change of seasons. Instead, he laid his hand gently on my shoulder, and told me that if I, Weetamoo, am to become Sachin of Uspokasit after him, and prove a good leader, I must learn to walk more carefully through the world. Page 6. I shook my long hair out of my eyes and stared up at him in surprise. I said he surely could not mean that I was poor at tracking game, or at passing unseen through the woods. He knows I can follow almost any trail, and he has seen for himself how I can edge my way near enough to a doe and her pair of speckled fawns to hear their three separate breaths. Did he not teach me all these skills himself? I sputtered. And was I not better at it than any boy or girl in our village? Father just looked at me with one eyebrow raised. His silence can be terrible. My voice simply trailed off. I hung my head and looked down at his moccasins, the moccasins I sewed for him. In truth, I thought I knew what he was going to say. After all, I admitted to myself, Father may have taught me how well to stalk and skulk, but he probably does not like the mischievous way I have taken to sneaking up close behind my little sister, Wutanika Kioska, while she is gathering wood or berries, so I can jump up and yell, Pah! Right behind her. I suppose I am sorry for the many times I have gotten her small brown eyes to go big with fright, but she is such a good, quiet girl, sometimes I cannot resist giving her a little scare when I catch her in the woods going so solemnly about her tasks. After a long minute, Father raised my chin with two fingers and made me look at him. He said it was not in the skulking or stalking kind of careful walking that I need improvement. Page 7. He said I often act too quickly, and thus foolishly, and he said I am far too quick to anger. Moreover, he said, since it was about to be my 14th winter, it was time to work on these matters. Then, at last, he smiled, and said he had something he wanted me to do. I feared it would be extra chores, but it was not. Here is what it is. Father bids me only to sit silently, apart from the others, for a few minutes each day, and think over all that I have done, and said, and what has happened. And he tells me that Mother says I am to pray to Squant, a good woman being, for patience. Thus I sit here again today, on the hill, overlooking the bay, doing just as Father and Mother ask. Later this day. I have decided I will do something else, too, besides the thinking and the praying, because I'm not doing very well as yet with this matter of patience. To sit quietly and wait for a trout to rise to the surface of a pool, or to sit quietly and listen to the stories about Squant and her giant husband, Mashop, and his billows of pipe smoke that, page 8, cause the fog along the shore. These things I can do easily, but only to sit? So I have a plan. I have gathered myself a nice big sheaf of clean birch bark, and on it I shall at times make a picture of some one thing that will help me remember what a given day has brought. I can make such pictures with a sharp stick blackened in the fire, and then I put a little deer tallow on my thumb and rub it over the mark to make the charcoal stain deeper. I can hide the birch bark in the blackberry tangle up here on the hill. Here is my first picture. It is a picture of me drawing a picture. This is enough thinking for one day. Later that night. I do not have my birch bark here. It is back up on the hill under the blackberry bush. But I am lying here quietly between my dear Auntie White Frost, my mother's sister, and my sister, Wutunikawusk, and I am thinking. Page 9. I would say it counts as being alone, if I am the only one lying awake in my family's we two, while everyone else is asleep and snoring. After Mother caught me quarreling with my sister earlier this evening over whose turn it was to grind corn, she took me aside and reminded me about my name. Weetamoo means sweetheart, and my family named me thus so I might bring harmony to our family and our people, she said. I nodded. I expected this. I have heard something of this sort said often, whenever I am present at feasts for baby naming ceremonies, and all the elders sit around and make long speeches on the importance of names. I know I have a quick temper, but how can I ever learn to be as patient as someone like Mother when I have such a poky little sister, and when my parents insist I learn to do all the poky tasks that children must do? I am trying, because I know it is important, but maybe I will always be the one who complains. Maybe I will never be the sweetheart of anybody's home. Page 10. 2 days later. I just realized I forgot to ask Squant to grant me patience yesterday, so I shall ask it doubly today. Please, Squant, grant me patience. Please, Squant, grant me patience. There. This morning, I got no more than halfway up the hill on my way to find my birch bark at my sitting down to think place before I heard Mother calling me to come help in the cornfield. Now I am back. If life were only all wading in the tidal river by our seaside village here at Mattapoisett, and catching crabs and running races, all tracking deer and snaring rabbits when we are back inland at Nemasket, and being the leader in all things, I think I could be happy and good all the time. But some days, how I dislike the endless hoeing and weeding of our fields, and the ordinary kind of sowing that is always waiting for me. I tell you, if I never tan another hide again, I shall not be sorry. And yet, I have to say harvesting the green corn, as my mother bid me to do all morning, is not the worst chore a person could be given. I always like to remember how our, page 11, mother corn came to us. I love to hear the stories of how the crows, our brave relatives, flew up here from far away to the southwest, carrying the kernels in their beaks and gave them to us. That is why we never kill these birds. We only scare them away from our fields, and always leave ears of corn behind for them, so they can dine too. Today, while we were harvesting, I thought of how much those ripe ears with their silky brown hair look like women. There they hide in their green, rustly skirts, and when I snap them gently off the stalks, I love to smell the milky sap on my fingers. Roast corn tonight, and soon the big harvest feast, the autumn Thanksgiving time. Of course we give thanks around the year, for the fish runs, for the strawberries when they come ripe, but the harvest feast is my favorite. Here is a picture of Mother Corn. Page 12. Mishini Kichwa, Time of Everlasting Flies, early September. Tomorrow we will travel across the bay to Montope, Massasoit's village, for a great green corn harvest gathering and a parley that will last for 7 days. There will be such food, and at night the big council fires and storytelling and dancing and a chance to see the children from other villages, like my friend Cedar. When Cedar is grown, they say she will be sachem of her people, whose seaside village lies just down the point from our Mattapoisett. So one day, we think, we shall be neighboring women sachems. We whisper to each other that when she and I are sachems together, we will try to govern well and wisely. Some of our elders say it is near Cedar's village, where Squant still dwells. They say she can sometimes be seen wandering out on the shoreline among the big rocks, or that she lies there, changed into a rock herself. If she really is a rock now, as some say, I suppose she must be very patient indeed. Or is she perhaps sometimes impatient herself, and tired of being a rock? I'm asking Squant to grant me patience, but all the same, I cannot wait to see my friend Cedar. Page 13. Then there is Massasoit's daughter Amy, and her big brothers, Wamsutta and Metacom. Amy is not like me and Cedar. She is very bold, yet she is brave, unlike my sister, and she does not cry when we tease her. As for those brothers of her, Metacom, the younger, is so quiet I do not know him very well. Wamsutta, a little older than me, is quite brave, and says just what he thinks, which I hear sometimes gets him in trouble. He is going to be sachem after Massasoit. Even though I am a girl, I think, perhaps, and something like Wamsutta. I fear I cannot take my birch bark with me over the water to Mount Soap, and so it must lie here in its hiding place under the blackberries. Also, I do not know if I will be able to find a quiet thinking place when we are visitors in a strange village. But I shall remember all that happens, and I shall make pictures somehow when I see them there. For now, here is a picture of our dugout canoe. Page 14. Montauk, the next day. I have slipped away to a rocky point, a little north of the encampment, to do my thinking. Massasoit's Montope is a large village, and now there comes a great gathering of many different bands of Wampanoag people, who are bustling all about. I must keep my eyes and ears open to all that is going on. I want to remember our voyage over here, for a strange thing happened. Not very great, perhaps, but it was a wonder to me. We crossed the bay this morning, 20 of my family and our relatives in our big dugout, and more dugouts full of other Pocosset families. Mother held our baby sister, Snowbird on her lap, in the cradleboard, and sat toward the stern. Auntie Whitefrost was seated there too, busy trying to keep her lively twins, Silboy and Gull Girl, from launching themselves overboard. They are going to be 2 winters old this year, and they are very excitable and wriggly. Wootinakukis and I helped Auntie for a while, until the motion of the boat lulled both little ones to sleep. I moved carefully forward then, closer to the paddles, and watched them at their work. I was thinking I would dearly love to try my own hand at being one of the crew, page 15, for a sea-going dugout this large. Of course, Father has taught me in Wootinikausku how to paddle small dugouts on the calm waters of our ponds and coves, but manning a giant, hollowed-out log of white pine over the white caps of the bay seems much more exciting. An ocean life for me. Because I had nothing much to do on the rest of the voyage over, except to hang on and ride, I grew drowsy in the salt spray and hot early autumn sunlight, watching the way the water swirled around the thrusting paddles. Suddenly, I saw in my mind's eye a beadwork design that looked something like the shape the water and foam took. I know I do not always enjoy the everyday sewing of aprons and breechcloths and the tanning of hides, but I love to make fine regalia and do beading and quillwork decorations. And I saw that swirling pattern as clearly as if I were working it upon soft doeskin spread out on my lap. Perhaps it was a kind of vision. Mother says the designs for her baskets often come to her in dreams. I am shy to ask her about it. Besides, she is so concerned these days with Snowbird, who is 9 moon old now, but who does not seem to thrive. It is a vision Squant sent me of this eddying design, I wonder. Page 16. Because I do not have my birch bark with me, I am drawing the design I saw here in the sand at Montope, so my hand can help my mind remember the way of it. Or is it the other way around? Some day I will bead this pattern into something important that I'm making. Later. The flies here at the ocean side come in great swarms, so Mother has smeared us all with ointment made from the red juice of the blood root plant she gathers every spring. Now we look very ruddy, but the flies are avoiding us.